Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forests of the night. What immortal hand or eye could frame thy fearful symmetry? In what distant deeps or skies burnt the fire of thine eyes? On what wings dare he aspire? What the hand dare seize the fire? And what shoulders and what art could twist the sinews of thy heart? And when thy heart began to beat, what dread hand and what dread feet? What the hammer, what the chain, in what furnace was thy brain? What the anvil, what dread grasp, dare its deadly terrors clasp? When the stars threw down their spears, and watered heaven with their tears, did he smile his work to see? Did he who made the lamb make thee? Tiger, tiger, burning bright, in the forests of the night, what immortal hand or eye dare frame thy fearful symmetry? Hello, Tonkpad, Nooknack, Jolon True. You're tuned in to Starfleet Interstellar Radio, frequency 0.89437, call sign Tiger Tiger. This is your host, Jane Sin speaking, call sign found by John Doe, and boy, oh boy, do we have a packed program for you this shift, dear listeners. I'm joined by a rainbow of call signs today. We've got broadcasts with Leetrapod, One Lost One, Yuray, 15, and for fuck's sake, Jim, all on deck, with special guest appearances from some experts in traditional Terran subculture, and as always, our call-in segment hosted by yours truly. Now, without further ado, let's get right into news from a galaxy far, far away with call sign Leetrapod.
News from the Empire, a notfic written by Litra, and recorded later, again, by Litra. This is a Venom/Star Wars prequel trilogy, Star Wars Rebellion era fanfic, but it is a notfic, it is a story idea, it has Sith shenanigans, Inquisitors, sort of canon compliant, currently rated Gen with no archive warnings. Background information is that I wrote this, or at least I published it, in March of 2019. I barely remember the concept for this. So, I'm going to read the notfic, and then I'm just going to spew out my current feelings. You are going to get my exact reaction to all of this 5 years after the fact. Summary. Eddie is a reporter for the Republic. Then the Republic becomes the Empire. Naturally, Eddie has some questions. Naturally, the Sith don't want him asking those questions. Chaos ensues. Okay, so the idea is all the Venom characters in the Star Wars universe, with the Star Wars characters there too. We're not talking about a total replacement of characters in setting. Which is frankly good because I love the Star Wars characters. As much as I love the Venom characters, I don't know them nearly as well as I know the Star Wars characters. Eddie is a reporter, still, and he's done a lot of articles about senator corruption. Maybe Anne is a senator's aide rather than a lawyer, or maybe she works as a lawyer for a senator. Anyway, that's how they end up breaking up. Same as the movie. Dan is still a doctor and relatively untouched by all the nonsense in the Senate. I'm picturing Eddie's ratty apartment is in the lower levels and he has to come up to the higher level parks just to see the sun after he ends up disgraced. Also, Clone Wars. The end of the Clone Wars, to be specific. Like, Anakin is going to go crazy any minute and Palpatine is all but Emperor when this story starts. The only reason Eddie isn't seen as a threat for his reporting when the Republic becomes the Empire is that he's living on the lower levels with no job. You know, I'm starting to remember this one. There was so much, like, background emotion in both those stories at this point. You just can feel that it's gonna blow up at any minute. I love it. So after he's been on his own for 6 months, or whatever, he gets a tip about the Jedi massacre. That's a few months ago now, but this video clip could be big. It shows Bail Organa there at the temple and the clones murdering younglings. The younglings couldn't possibly have been a part of the conspiracy, and by law, they should have been returned to their families or taken into protective custody and given therapy. Read brainwashing, this is the Empire after all. That's what happens when younglings from the Separatists are captured. So why not the Jedi younglings? Eddie goes and confronts Bail, and he doesn't think he'll get anywhere. This is his life after all, but he's got to try. He's got nothing left to lose. See, I'm imagining the clip. I don't think it's in here, but I'm like the clip from the movie of Bail in the speeder outside the Jedi temple, and he's just like, come on, run, you can make it to the speeder, and then the kid is shot down, because, ooh, that tugs at my heartstrings every time I watch it. And it would clearly put, like, that's a clear scene. It's not easy to misinterpret that. Of course, it could be really bad for Bail, but... Eddie asks if Bail was friends with the Jedi, and why didn't anyone notice if the conspiracy was that widespread? He also asks about the end of the war and a few other things that are pushing the boundaries. Bail doesn't know who this guy is. He doesn't know if he should try to recruit Eddie for the rebellion or if he's a spy from Palpatine. Then one of the Emperor's aides sees them. Bail sees them watching and says some pointed things that aren't against the agenda, but are also totally in favor of the rebellion, and points Eddie at the Chancellor's office before exiting stage left. I just love Bail. I love how much quiet chaos he can get into. He's, like, right beside all the big major explosions. You just gotta push him a little bit to the left, and he does the rest. Eddie tries to get some information out of the aide and ends up basically chasing him into the Emperor's outer office. Palpatine sees him before the senatorial guard kicks him out. Unknown to Eddie, Palpatine has him followed and eventually decides he might be useful, but he also might be too dangerous to let live. He leaks just enough information that Eddie finds one of his Sith labs. I know, like, it's not the primary canon that Palpatine has Sith labs all over the planet, but come on. He totally does. And then also, how has nobody found them? Okay, but that's a different story. Anyway. Actually, maybe he gives the responsibility to one of his inquisitors? One of the sisters or brothers or something? It's early enough that they would want to impress the Emperor, but also, they're not quite established yet. No one knows that you do as the Inquisitors say, and that they're his special unit. So even though the Inquisitor is still just watching Eddie, Eddie catches wind of it and follows them back to the lab. From there, Venom comes in. I'd need to watch the movie again to make a proper parallel, but Eddie is infected and then manages to get away and heads home. Then the sister comes to get him and finish the job, but by then, they've integrated. Mostly. Eddie is still freaking out, but he's not feeling sick anymore. He manages to take down the sister and get away. The only person who he feels he can trust is Annie. He ends up stumbling into her apartment and collapses. Luckily, Dan is there and manages to get him stabilized. Yeah, like I said back then, I'd need to rewatch the movie to make proper parallels, but can you imagine how well those two, like, scenarios fit together? So in this universe, Venom is a Sith? Ooze. Something. Meh. But otherwise, like, direct parallel. There's an internal dream sequence or something in which Venom and Eddie chat, and we learn more about Venom's origin in this universe. The symbiotes were created by the Sith to empower their soldiers way back when, except the technology was lost. Palpatine has been experimenting, but so far the symbiotes have just been pits of hunger. Very good for disposal, but not for the weapons that Palpatine wanted. Of course, he's also got the Death Star on the side and the whole giant weapon, planetary weapon. Like, come on, dude. Except now that Eddie has survived interrogation and killed one of Palpatine's hands or inquisitors, Palpatine is even more interested in him. The Emperor sends more of his agents out to capture Eddie with the order to bring him back alive. Eddie and Venom try to fight them off, but they're still not working together properly and end up getting captured. Now, unlike in the movie, Palpatine wants to keep Eddie and Venom together, provided they are working for him. He gives them the ultimatum of work for me or die. Eddie starts asking questions because at this point, he's seen enough to put two and two together and get four. He can figure out that the Jedi thing was just to get rid of the opposition. He can also figure out that Bail was talking at cross purposes, and that if he doesn't go along with this, not only he, but Annie and Dan will be in trouble as well. Eddie doesn't like being forced into a corner, and neither does Venom. They agree to the deal, but both of them are just waiting for the opportunity to kill Palpatine. One benefit of the symbiote, Palpatine can't read Eddie's mind! Since Venom was made from the dark side, he has certain powers, and one of them is shielding, so that he could potentially attack other Sith on his master's behalf. Palpatine promises Eddie will be rewarded if he does well. He might not even realize that Venom is sentient. Later, Venom sneaks into Bail Organa's senatorial chambers, and for a minute, the reader thinks Palpatine sent him. Bail grabs a hidden blaster and shoots at Venom, but Venom brushes it off. Only he doesn't attack. Eventually, Bail asks who he is and why he's there. Venom produces the data stick that he collected all his evidence on and gives it to Bail. He says that he will send more when he can. Then Venom turns and starts towards the exit. Bail calls after him, asking what he should call him, and they say the "We are Venom" line before fading into the dark. If this were a movie, that would be the end scene, possibly with Venom sneaking off across the city. I imagine Eddie eventually works with Bail to get Annie and Dan off Coruscant and to safety. He also continues to pass information to the Resistance. At some point, Venom works beside Vader and so on. There's plenty of potential here for more or sequels. I like this idea. I still like the concept. On a second look, we need more reporting from Eddie. We need more of him hunting down evidence, not just following an inquisitor to a lab, but actual investigative reporting. Show his skills. And then I need to go more in depth into the, like, we are starting to work together and the emotional pull there, because the bond between Eddie and Venom is never explained in this notfic. We've got the movie to base this off of, but come on. Give me some of that juicy, juicy character development. And then, like, yes, it's a satisfying ending to have him be like, oh yes, I'm a double agent now. But also, we need a big climatic scene, not just a conversation. So maybe something with Vader or something like Eddie has to prove his worth. Okay, he's been backed into a corner, and Palpatine is like, you will work for me or die. And he's like, well, I don't want to die. And Palpatine is like, all right then, if you're really going to work with me, I'm going to go and send you to this place, and you have to go and kill this person. And then he finds out that it's someone, like, important, or he has to do it, and it's like someone on Vader's ship, or it's someone that the audience knows and has sympathy for, because, oh, if he suddenly has to kill one of the clones who went rogue or something, oh, because the clones know exactly how bad things were. But then the clone could also convey to him, hey, I have all this information. And so then they could secretly work together. And he could get the clone, like, pretend to kill the clone, but then the clone goes into hiding, and maybe he brings the clone to Bail? But he doesn't want to put a spotlight on Bail. He knows Bail has to be something, but But he also, that's another place where Eddie can be, like, all research happy. He can go and investigate Bail and figure out that, yes, Bail is a, like, cornerstone of the resistance. And if Palpatine found out about it, then everyone is fucked. Yeah, this could be a whole thing. A whole big thing. But right now, that's it.
Wow, I didn't know that was happening. Thank you, Callsign Leecherpod. I'm really holding space for that. It's always so moving to hear of other journalists dedicated to the truth, because as I always say, Tiger Tiger is on Starfleet frequency, but it's not a Starfleet frequency. We cover all perspectives here at 0.89437. Speaking of perspectives, call sign One Lost One is here with an absolutely fascinating interview with three Terran priestesses of traditional subculture. Take a listen.
Hello, my name is One Lost One, and this is an interview with three fandom contributors to the Star Trek fandom. I'm here today with...
My name is Larissa Bernstein, or Tilara, in the Star Trek fandom.
My fandom name is Shelley Butler.
And I'm Paige Wongs.
So, the first question is, what got you into fandom?
Tilara?
I got into fandom, like fandom in general, initially through my love of the Beatles. In my quest to read all about them, all the juicy details and background bits, I ended up on the Usenet, then the early mailing lists, web rings, and so on. This is how I found fic and got hooked. Star Trek came soon after that. To find out that there are other people out there coming up with headcanons and fixits and all the ideas was rather mind-blowing to me.
Paige?
Yeah, I can't even remember when I got into fandom. I was a huge anime fan, and somehow I, you know, discovered the online, you know, all the stuff on the web and people's personal web pages, and I guess I must have stumbled across fan fiction and fan art somewhere on there. Forevermore, going forward, if there was a new piece of media I liked, go see what's online.
Shelley?
Okay, so my finding fandom was from the time of the beginning, pre-internet, when I went to conventions in Los Angeles, Star Trek conventions, huge, big Star Trek conventions, and I kept hearing these rumors about something about Kirk and Spock, but I didn't really understand it until I finally went one time. I used to always go by myself, and then I found this table with these zines on them, and I was like so freaked out, I couldn't believe it. And I saw these pictures that I couldn't imagine, you know, the covers of the zines. And so I would circle around and circle around the whole entire convention until I finally got enough nerve to stop and look at these things, at these zines, and then buy them. And I rushed home, and I just was, that was it. That was it.
Roughly.
I was hooked.
Roughly, what year was that?
Oh, my God. Let's see. They were building the pyramids, and there was the pyramid. Oh, yeah, about 700 years ago.
700? Okay. And
yeah,
just
700.
For anyone listening who doesn't know, what's a zine?
Oh, what's a zine? A zine is a term meaning a magazine and a book with... usually anthologies of fandom, of writings.
Okay, so fan-based writing.
Yeah, fan-based writing.
Or art, yes. Or anything. Okay. Okay, so
that
for...
It used to be published.
Published, like, in paper copies. I know that a lot of people collect them.
yes.
If you had to pick just one fandom pairing to live on for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
One fandom pairing. Oh my God, this is such a hard question. I have acquired quite a few fandoms over the decades. Star Trek, of course, but also Phantom of the Opera, Hannibal, and various rand outlandish fandoms like Dance of the Vampires, Singing in the Rain, old Hollywood films, and the like. I have love for all of them. But if you force me to pick one pairing only, Kirk Spock, for the intense impact they've had on my life. All the grand narratives and emotions are there, angst, humor, all the fanish tropes had been done there first.
Thank you. And Paige?
With apologies to my original OTP, the pairing that first got me really hooked, I would have to say Kirk and Spock, which I've only discovered more recently, but the depth of the fandom is just mind-boggling. And, you know, in addition to how likable the series is and the characters themselves, you know, they're just so handsome and so moral and compassionate and intelligent and many other things I could say. So yeah, I feel like I could just spend my entire life just diving into this fandom head first and not just reading and staring, but, you know, creating stuff. So yeah.
Shelley?
And my answer is very simple. Yeah. Only chaos. I love Kirk and Spock. I love them from the moment I found them. The fandom, first of all, as a community, is fantastic. I would spend the whole rest of my life on a desert island surrounded by chaos scenes, and I would be very happy. It's their passionate love and their spirituality and their connection and the... It's just mind-blowing. I wish I could describe it even more, but that's why.
Thank you. This one is kind of a tricky question, so if you don't want to answer it, that's perfectly fine, because it's hard to pick one thing sometimes. But what do you think, what do you consider your contribution to fandom to be? Talara?
I'm a writer. I'm a vidder. I curate vid shows. I organize conventions. I don't know if you can call this a big contribution compared to the massive amount my fanish form mothers or force mutters have created and done for fandom. But if there's even one person out there enjoying my stuff and maybe getting inspired by it to create something too, then it's already a win in my book.
Oh, that's so true. Shelley?
My contribution to fandom, well, I guess it has to be the art. So that's easy to answer.
Okay.
Because when I first started with Chaos, it was only, I just wrote some stories. And then Robin Hood, a publisher of zines way back when, asked me, said, oh, by the way, are you an artist? And I went, yeah. Mm-hmm. And she said, okay, draw me something. And the rest is history. So yes, art is really the only, the basic
contribution.
Contribution. Mm-hmm. Yes.
As for me, although I consider myself an artist, I don't have a very large output of art, shall we say. So I think my biggest contribution has been as a cheerleader over the years. I love leaving enormous comments on, you know, fan fiction and fan art that's inspired me and brought me a lot of joy. So that's probably been more of my contribution to fandom than art, but hopefully going forward I can do more art. I felt proud of getting involved more recently with the HissCon, and all thanks to the wonderful Talara, who was the one who asked me to get involved.
Thanks, Talara.
So yeah, it's funny how someone can sort of spark that,
yes,
that entry into the fandom, you know. So I think that's interesting that you, Shelley, got into art that way as well.
Right. No, that's a very good answer. That's right. And your contribution as a cheerleader is great. Everybody loves comments and wants kudos and wants to, you know, response. That's what our community is all about. So yes, you do contribute with that, and you will with your beautiful art.
You know, Shelley, you're an inspiration, so I can only dream to create as much beautiful things as you have over the years.
Oh, Paige, thank you. Thank you. I love it. It's my passion. It's absolutely my passion. Other things, of course, you know, are fun in life, Mm-hmm. But KS is so close to my heart. So, yeah.
What is your absolute favorite thing about fandom?
Ooh. Well, it actually, I feel like that sort of leads from our previous mention about the people who got us inspired. But my favorite thing, you know, is that it feels like it's this like network of joy and inspiration and you know, it's people who are doing something that they love, like the purest love that they have, something they do in their free time for fun, and other people find joy in that. And then, you know, we don't just get inspired by the original work, we get inspired by each other and excited by each other and always just keeps on giving. So I don't know, that's sort of how I feel about fandom.
Thank you. Talara?
My favorite thing about fandom is the friends I've made through the decades. That sense of community and our hive mind that brings about the most amazing or hilarious or dramatic creations. Together, we shape narratives and transform media.
Yes, and truly my favorite thing has to be the community. It's absolutely wonderful. And this particular community, as opposed to my beginning community, which was a long time ago, this is my new community. And the reason it's my favorite thing is because all these young people were so inspirational to me and so filled with energy and so filled with enthusiasm that it absolutely drew me back in after a number of years where I was out of fandom. So that is definitely my favorite thing.
Yes, I like how you use the word energy, because that feels like the word I was searching for. It's like this feedback loop of energy where we're just all so full of love and excitement and sharing that together.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you guys so much for participating. And now back to our regular program.
Thank you again to Callsign One Lost One for that space boots on the ground journalism. That was a wonderful look into traditional Terran subculture. And of course, a special thank you to the High Priestesses, Talara, Shelley, and Paige for taking time out of their light cycles to talk with us. And now, the weather.
And now the weather. Cloud recessed sky is as clear as ever despite the name, with a chance of rain shower possible if you head toward the hills. Further down in the Karakura Township, it's likely to start raining rather a lot today, with a chance of tears and reality forming high in the sky. Residents are recommended to stock up on antacids, and then stay indoors so they can't see the destruction that has become common in the wake of that group. You know the one. Gotham region is set for a high of 29 degrees, and this is the fourth day of clear skies and sunshine this year. And it's only August. Predictions for winter are looking grim in the face of this global warming. Across the Bay and Metropolis, traffic is heavy on the northern ends of 2nd, 4th, 5th, and 9th Streets still, due to the latest alien incursion there. Caution is advised as the pouring rain makes quick escapes extra hazardous. DS9 station is, as ever, atmospherically controlled, and the petition to remove it from the weather roundup has once again been denied, due to needing to rack up the weather segment's runtime. Amityville is a horror as always, but don't let that scare you away. Motel prices are cheap as they come, with free souvenirs in the form of possibly radioactive ray guns supplied by the locals. The weather in the coming weeks is set to be a pleasant 23 to 27 degrees, with overnight lows bringing a spine-chilling cold that makes blanket-wrapped nights so cozy. And if you like cuddling up cozy-like, the snows are set to arrive early in the northern regions of Caedwin. Low slopes are said to be excellent for skiing, and the views in the higher altitudes are to die for. In Rohan, there have been several reports of unauthorized fires lit in restricted wilderness parks. The dry spell there has made even small fires bring the potential for larger consequences. Their southern neighbors in Gondor have promised the loan of extra volunteer firefighters to bolster numbers, as their own season has been particularly wet, though. And now, back to you, Jennison.
The That was call sign Uray with the weather covering all quadrants as usual. I know that I'm glad to hear Deep Space Nine is still climate controlled. In this age of change, it's nice to have a constant. I'll now hand over the frequency to call sign Leisurepod as I prepare for our call-in portion of the program. I hear they've got a great piece prepared for a certain portion of our dear listeners with special anatomy.
Five things your soul mark can tell you about your match. Written and recorded by Litra. A clickbait quiz style fanfic with no specific fandom or pairing. Recorded for Voice Team, Team Tiger Tiger, 2024. Summary. Eager to meet your soulmate? Your soul mark may be able to tell you more than you think. Answer these five short questions to learn more. Question 1. Where is your soul mark located? A soul mark can appear anywhere on the body and is generally between 1 inch to 3 inches in size. Upper torso, lower torso, back, legs or feet, arms or hands, head. Upper torso. This is the location of both the heart and the lungs. Your soulmate will likely be caring and enjoy having conversations with you. While this seems like a simple thing, it's the heart of any true relationship. You will be the couple that everyone knew would end up with each other because you were simply made for each other. Lower torso. A person's guts may not seem romantic, but this is the location for several chakra points. The Greeks and Romans believed that the stomach was the true root of passions. Therefore, you can expect your soulmate to have hidden depths. Several historical soulmate pairs have had marks in these locations, including Antony and Cleopatra. Your relationship will not be a quiet one. Back. While your soulmate may seem callous at first glance, they are not turning their back on you. Your soulmate will simply enjoy their privacy and take a while to open up to people. Your relationship will be all the more precious for this slow start. Your connection will eventually turn into one of the deepest relationships of your life. Legs or feet. The legs symbolize both activity and travel. This is a soulmate you won't find going through your everyday routine. Get out of that rut and look for them in exotic locations. Whether that's going for a walk to check out the neighborhood or taking that trip you've been dreaming of. This is a relationship that will take you places you never expected. Arms or hands. Your soulmate is likely someone who enjoys projects, whether it's tinkering with their car, knitting, or doing things around the house. Find things you will be able to do together, and you'll be able to build a future anyone would be envious of. Head. While a soul mark on the head or face is rare, it is not unheard of. Typically, people with head soul marks are intellectuals who aren't afraid to hide their thoughts and opinions. You can be prepared for some serious debates, but under all that talk, they do care deeply about the things that matter to them. Question 2. What color is your soul mark? Color symbology differs between cultures, but tends to mean similar things to all members of a match. If your soul mark contains two or more colors, choose the most prominent. Black, white, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple. Black. As you likely already know, when a soulmate turns black, that means the other half of the link is dead. But all hope is not lost. There is a chance that a second soul mark will appear. And in the meantime, there are plenty of other people with no mark or black marks that will be happy to get to know you. White. Congratulations! White soul marks are extremely rare. It is theorized that white soul marks indicate a match who has either not yet been born or who is otherwise not of this world. The most famous white soul mark belonged to a pair with one half in a coma. Keep a watch on your mark to see if its color changes. Red. Across the worlds, this color can mean many different things, but most often, anger or love. Your soulmate will be a passionate person who does not do things halfway. Orange. Orange combines the passions of red with the joy of yellow. Your soulmate will be an intense person who is quick to laugh and quick to forgive. This person may seem like all surface, but they often just need a good partner to ground them. Yellow. Yellow is the color of sunshine. Your soulmate will likely be full of joy and energy. It is also associated with intellect and being active. Yellow soulmates are often highly charismatic. Green. The color of growth and life. Green soulmates are often overlooked, but they'll be there when you need them. They are the people who will bring fresh ideas to the table when everyone is worn out, or step in to mediate a tense situation. Having a green soulmate on your side will give you a lifelong ally and friend. Blue, the color of the sky and sea. It is often associated with depth and stability. It symbolizes trust, loyalty, and wisdom. Blue soulmates may be intellectuals or caretakers. They are organized and may seem distant at first, but once you get to know them, they will be the person you rely on the most. Purple. Purple mixes the passions of red with the loyalty and wisdom of blue. Purple soulmates have strong ideals and are willing to work and plan to make their view a reality. They are often leaders in their fields. Though they may seem like a mystery from the outside, they'll be happy to talk to someone they trust. Question 3. What is the image of your soul mark? The image depicted in a soul mark is one of the most widely debated topics, but it is generally agreed that the subject will be important to the people who wear it. Animal, plant, object, symbol, abstract. Animal. Many cultures across the world have theories about animal soulmates. A common theme in these theories is instinct. Working with or beside your soulmate will feel right. That is where you are supposed to be. You may find yourself anticipating what they do or say. Certain animals, such as cats, dogs, or birds, have their own symbolism and can add insight to the nature of the relationship. Plants. Like animal marks, many plants have their own symbolism. The language of flowers is extensive and well worth the read. But for other plants, trees often represent stability and longevity. Vines represent flexibility, and fruits or vegetables often represent abundance and fertility. Objects. People with object soulmates are often envied since they have an extra hint as to how to find their match. These objects may be the passions of the person or simply a clue as to the right direction, but in either case, the mark tells its own story. Symbol. Symbol marks may be harder to interpret, but they carry a strength to match. People with symbol marks often have strong ideals and opinions. Only someone equally passionate will be able to keep up with them. Abstract. Marks without a visible identifier are sometimes mistaken for chaotic, but that's true only on the surface. In truth, these matches complement each other well. These are the couples that no one ever thought would work out. The farm boy and the city girl, the jock and the bookworm. Their differences, in truth, strengthen the pair, and each knows they can count on each other to cover their weakness. Question 4. What is the shape of your soul mark? While some soul marks are constrained by the subject, many also adhere to basic geometric commonalities. Circular, triangular, square or rectangular, symmetrical vertically, symmetrical horizontally, abstract. Circular. Circles are sometimes called the first shape. Circular soulmates are strong in that they have a firm idea of who they are, their core. Unfortunately, this also means that they can be dislodged from their community. They may be something of a rolling stone, settling for a time before rolling off again. It may be up to you to give them the home they need, either literally or as a traveling companion they can rely on. Triangular. Triangular soul marks often indicate a third element to the relationship. At least 4 known triad soulmate groups are known to have triangular soul marks too. In more traditional partnerships, it often symbolizes a passion that the partners share. Square or rectangular. More commonly known as box soul marks, these marks indicate a strong foundation to the relationship. People with box soul marks are often connected to their community and grounded in their beliefs. Symmetrical vertically. Sometimes called mirror soul marks, these marks often imply a balance to the relationship. Even when arguing, these people will support each other, pushing each other to achieve. Couples with mirror soul marks often seem to know what the other person is thinking or explain each other's actions to outsiders. Symmetrical horizontally. Sometimes called horizon marks, these soul marks indicate hidden depths to the relationship. Like a clear lake reflecting the sky, both lake and sky are more than they seem. People who do not know you well may not understand, but there will be a connection or understanding between the two of you that is soul deep. Abstract. Abstract soul marks may still have a sense of order to them. It just isn't the typical one. These pairs march to the beat of their own drum, sometimes rejecting the norms of society or family to do so. While this may make the relationship harder, it will also make it more rewarding, because your match will truly understand you in a way others don't or can't. Question 5. When did your soul mark appear? Soul marks can appear at any point in a person's life. The time will often indicate the type of relationship you can expect. 0 to 1 year old. 1 to 3 years old. 4 to 9 years old. 10 to 15 years old. 16 to 21 years old. 22 to 30 years old. 30 to 50 years old. 50 and older. 0 to 1 years old. A mark that appears before the first year nearly always indicates that your match is older than you. It also indicates a strong connection that can be formed at any period in a person's life. Your match may start out as a friend and grow into a lover, or you may be comrades in arms or allies. Such a mark represents a non-sexual relationship as often as a romantic one. 1 to 3 years old. Like a mark that appears soon after birth, a mark that appears before a person is 3 years old often indicates a friendship match that can be formed in any stage of a person's life. The difference is that if the mark appeared later, chances are your match will be younger than you. 4 to 9 years old. It is in this stage of life that we learn who we are and how we fit into the world. It is these factors which will shape the relationship. The girl next door, the childhood friend, the schoolmate. These matches live their whole lives together and grow to know each other almost better than themselves. Marks that appear at this time may still represent friendship rather than romance. 10 to 15 years old. Sometimes referred to as puppy love marks, the marks and relationships that form during this period may seem childish, but they have plenty of time to mature. Don't worry about getting to the finish line. You have all the time in the world in front of you. 16 to 21 years old. This is the most common period in a person's life for a soul mark to appear. People with marks from this period often say that they found their match by chance, but it was a chance that was meant to be. One look was all it took. 22 to 30 years old. By this point in a person's life, the people in question have a better idea of what they both want out of a relationship and out of life. This will help define the relationship and smooth out any bumps in the road. Soul marks that appeared during this time may have less overt passions than the previous bracket, but they also tend to last longer. 30 to 50 years old. A soul mark that appears in this time span may be the second of a person's life. Even if it's not, this relationship will be different than all previous relationships. The appearance of your soul mark means that you have entered a new stage in your life, where you are open to new things, and your new partner will help with that. 50 or older. At this stage in life, most people are looking for companionship more than anything else. Look for someone with similar life experiences and interests. It is there that you will find your partner.
Thank you, Litra. Well, dear listeners, I'm back, and you know what that means. It's call-in time. As always, it's first hail, first answer, with as-needed preference given to hails from deep space frequencies. All right, let's get into it. Hello, Tongpei, Nook Neck, Jolan True. You've patched into interstellar radio frequency 0.89437, call sign Tiger Tiger. This is Janison. What can I do for you?
Live long and prosper, Janison. I have a query regarding Terran leisure activities.
Wow, Terran leisure activities. Can I take that as confirmation you're a Vulcan, dear caller?
A logical conclusion, and therefore a correct one.
So tell me more about your leisure conundrum.
Conundrum is a needlessly syllabic word to describe my interest. My query is about the logistical capabilities of discovering an individual's sexual orientation and outing venue preference within a radio program such as frequency 0.89437.
Oh wow, we might not be able to air this.
I was under the impression this was a live broadcast.
It is. How about I cut to an advertisement and you and I exchange pad IDs real quick so I can assist you with this scientific inquiry?
That would be a creative solution to our conundrum.
Alrighty, dear listeners, we'll be right back after a quick ad break.
Another day of nothing. Nothing exciting. Nothing new. Nothing purposeful.
Feeling lost? Stuck in a rut? Wondering what your life's purpose could be? What if you could leave behind the monotony of Earth and discover a universe full of adventure? What if you could explore new worlds, meet fascinating beings, make a real difference? Starfleet needs you. Imagine commanding a starship, solving intergalactic mysteries, or brokering peace between civilizations. Starfleet is where bold individuals transform their lives and the universe. Don't waste another moment waiting for life to happen. Make the leap. Join Starfleet. And boldly go where no one has gone before.
Okay, Radio, you've convinced me. Time to stop being boring Karen and be Starfleet Karen.
Welcome back, dear listeners. For closure's sake, I can confirm that the previous caller's questions on Terran sexuality will be comprehensively explored on a non-public frequency. Now, a new caller. Hello, Tongpei Nunknek. Jolan True, you've patched into interstellar radio frequency 0.89437, call sign Tiger Tiger. This is Janeson. What can I do for you?
You have dishonored my language with your pronunciation of Nunknek.
And I prostrate before you for my dishonorableness.
A disgusting display of human weakness. I do not desire information from the likes of you.
Oh, how unfortunate. Next caller, I guess.
Halt your fleeing, human. I require information, and it must be from you. I must now teach your squirming human tongue to speak my language with honor and audacity to legitimize my interrogation.
A linguistics lesson, fantastic. Go right ahead, esteemed teacher.
To speak Klingon with true honor, one must hold themselves with pride and speak words with conviction. Listen, human, as I do so. Nuchnech!
Nuchnech.
No, again, human, feel the strength in your vocal cords. Wield your projection like a batleth.
Nuchnech.
Adequate, human. I will now commence my interrogation. Where can one access the recipe for rum cakes from the previous Stardate's program?
An archive of all our segments is available via the Federation Frequency Database under the call sign Tiger Tiger. Oh, they hung up. Happy to help. Next caller. Hello, Tongpei Nochnech, Jolan Tru, you've patched into Interstellar.
This is Commander T'Kessa of the Romulan Star Empire. Your frequency is polluting Empire radio waves with Federation garbage. By order of the High Senate, you must cease your monotonous broadcast or prepare to be shut down with force.
Hi, Commander. Unfortunately, I'm just a host, not a frequency owner, so I can't shut this operation down for you.
Then you will die.
Don't worry, dear listeners. The higher-ups at Tiger Tiger always knew this was a possibility when they stationed our broadcaster so close to the neutral zone. I am more than equipped to handle dissatisfied callers. And to our loyal Romulan Star Empire listeners, never fear, we're not going off air anytime soon. Thank you.